Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
Yes, welcome to Monday's Off the Ball. On this Easter Bank Holiday Monday, we are going to start with rugby, and we will also be speaking with Billy Joe Padden later in the show on what was a pretty interesting weekend in Gaelic games as well. But for Monday Night Rugby, we're joined in studio by Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent. Rory, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Dave.
Eddie O'Sullivan is on the line. Good evening, Eddie.
Evening, Dave. How are you doing?
What a weekend it was for Irish rugby. Even the game that didn't produce an Irish winner was a bit of a classic, as Kloster and Connacht shared 8 tries between them. But Champions Cup-wise, first time since 2012, there's no English representation in the semi-finals. That's just by the by, but it feels good. Let's start in chronological order and go back to Thomond Park Saturday afternoon. Absolutely brilliant game between Munster and Toulon. Munster squeaking by a point, 2019, thanks to that moment of magic from Andrew Conway. There seems to be a narrative out there that poxed is the word I've heard used most often. Lucky, very fortunate, robbery. Surely that is doing a huge disservice to this Munster performance and ignores the history of Munster rugby and a side and a culture and a club that have delivered wins like this routinely over the last 18 years.
Yeah, I think even Joe Schmidt in the build-up to the Grand Slam game said you need a little bit of luck on your side. They got a decent chunk of it. They won't want to be relying on it when they go to Bordeaux in a couple of weeks' time. But I thought Toulon were the better team for large parts of that game, particularly the first quarter. They might have had a penalty try and a yellow card against Simon Zeebo in the first minute. I've heard a bit of debate about that, but I will come down on the side. It probably was when he denied Chris Ashton that try. But they weathered a storm. They did what you have to do against a massive Toulon team. Toulon, Matthew Bastereau summed it up after. He said, no try, no win. They just couldn't finish the chances they created for themselves. They had all the ball. They had all the territory. They pummeled Munster. They stretched them. They won collisions. They did all the things you're supposed to do except score. They only got 6 points as a reward, and then a bit of ingenuity from Conor Murray, who knew the law book better than a team of officials. He decided something in 2 seconds that took the ref 5 minutes to decide. And once they got in front, they were very good in the third quarter, a little bit like Leinster, and then they wobbled, and then they produced a moment of magic, and that will go down as one of the great Thomond Park European moments. And they weathered a storm. They got there in the end. And I think it would be a little bit of a disservice. I think they would accept that, they played against a very, very good team who played very, very well. But they took their chances and the others didn't. And that's what matters in the end.
Yeah, had you given how depleted the Munster ranks were, and they were shorn of maybe a third of their team that would be guaranteed starters, internationals as well, and up against a side with the pedigree, the budget of Toulon, Munster were always going to be a position where to win it, they'd have to produce a 9 out of 10 performance and they'd have to ride their luck.
Yeah, I think Van Grand knew that earlier in the week. If you listen to the rhetoric coming out of Munster, was he was talking about, no heroes born in peacetime. It was all war and battle stuff. So they were really doing a monster on it. They were battening down the hatches. And I think they knew going in that it was all about staying in the game, not letting Toulon get a couple of scores away from them. And for that to happen, they had to play like they did. They had to defend every tackle like it was the last tackle of the game. So they brought that sort of kind of do-or-die energy into it, which we know over historically Munster are. It's hard to find a better team in the world that can do that sort of stuff when the chips are down. And certainly, talking to people who were at the game, the energy coming from the crowd as well was the old school Munster, the old Thomond Park, heaving with energy, and they were feeding off it. And that was their best shot. Like we all said during the week, look, if you line up both teams on paper, given Munster's injuries and all that, given the heavyweights that were coming, like they'd really drawn the short straw in this game, but that was the only way around it. And that's how it turned out. Like, they got very limited chances. They got kind of, like, Conor Murray's try was a bizarre try. I mean, fair play to Conor for spotting it, but you wouldn't want to bank on that every Saturday. And, they were still on the way out the door. And, Trinduck, as Trinduck does, gives them a chance. And Conway just pinned his ears back, and the rest is history. So it was one of those games, like, and nobody cares on a Monday morning. Like, that's what it was all about, and they got there. But here's the thing, when you do that, it gives a sense of energy to the team now going into the next round. And I think they'll go to the semi-finals now, and they won't feel under pressure that, no one's expecting too much from them. They've really cemented their season already, and they can go to Paris now and really cut the straps loose and have a crack, and they're like 80 minutes away from a European final. So, like, I think last Saturday was a watershed moment in the season for Munster. And in many ways, I think, you know, it just shows, puts Munster back in a place where they always believed they were, but found it hard to get there for a while.
Yeah, looking at the guys they were missing, Earls, Blend, Allo, Donald, Clute, Farrell and Tauta, their midfield pair, and then, of course, Ziba goes down after 25 minutes. Rory mentioned, Eddie, that moment which may well have seen Simon Ziba ended up in the bin and conceding a penalty try for that batting away of the ball in the in-goal area with Chris Ashton seemingly ready to score that try for Toulon. And it was one of maybe three or four absolutely key turning points in this game. What was your take on it? A genuine attempt to play the ball or a deliberate attempt to play it away and therefore he got away with one?
Well, in these moments when something happens in the spur of the moment, I always trust my gut in it. You know, if you're watching the game long enough. And my gut reaction was that was at least a penalty and possibly a yellow card. I thought the penalty try might have been a stretch, but the fact that Munster got a scrum out of it, it was just bizarre. I thought it was an unbelievably poor call.
Why is the penalty try a stretch if it looks like Ashton is getting there?
Because he was still in flight and he would have had to control the ball and ground it. He didn't have full control of the ball when Zebos batted it away. I would question that Ashton was actually in control of the ball, which would say if he was in control of it, you couldn't be sure he'd have grounded it. But I think Zebo batted it away, which is the other side of the equation. You're not allowed to bat the ball out of play. So I definitely thought it was a penalty, at least a penalty. And you could argue a penalty try. I'm not saying it was. I'm just saying it wouldn't have been a slam dunk penalty try for me. But I thought the call was bizarre that they got a scrum out of it. They got to clear their lines, which was to me was... And the kindness you're going to change, if they're up rolled this way for the next 80 minutes, they could win this game. And that's actually what happened, you know. And you got to say, look, the other thing that we haven't really talked much about is I thought... From Munster's side of it, they absolutely destroyed the Toulon lineout. Mm. Like, Toulon lost four lineouts, which is a bad day at the office out of 13. But the other nine they won, I think about three or four of them they could use. The rest of them were on the ground and they were tidying them up. I think that was a massive strategic or tactical victory because they couldn't launch Bastro and Nano into the Munster midfield, which would have been their plan. Got over the gain line on the first strike, and then it would have been all hands to the pump. They never got that sort of momentum from the set piece. And you have 13 lineouts, and you end up only less than a third of them usable. That's a big factor in taking away your attacking game. And I thought, to me, as like that was a major factor in winning the game. It just kept Munster in the game because Toulon couldn't build relentless pressure off their lineouts, which they were banking on doing.
Yeah, Peter Mahoney at his belligerent, rampant best on opposition lineouts. So on the Ziba moment, before we leave it, would you agree with Eddie that there can be some debate over what the penalty might have been, but ultimately Munster got away with it?
I would agree. I mean, look, there is grey there, and that's where obviously the referee made a completely different decision than what we're talking about. I thought Nigel Owens, you know, Toulon were fairly frustrated with him by the end of the day, and I can understand why. And I thought he rushed that decision a little bit, and he almost had his mind made up even when he reviewed it. To me, you could come down on whether it's a penalty try or a penalty, but I think definitely
it's not a defense scrum.
There. No, and if you go, we saw with Leinster yesterday. Leinster got their noses in front and kept themselves there. I think if Toulon had got in front that early, and I didn't mention the atmosphere, it was amazing. Like the place was raucous from the off. But what a way to silence a crowd after less than a minute with a really clever chip through. Ashton doing what Ashton does best. He's not very popular, but he's unbelievably good. It would have changed the entire landscape of the game had you know Toulon gone 5 or 7 points up at that stage. Instead, Munster were able to weather that early storm. So it was a massive, massive call. And we mentioned luck right from the start, and that was a stroke of luck. Ziba did everything he could to deny it. I don't think his intention was to do anything cynical. I think he just hurled himself at the ball in the hope that he'd just prevent the try, because anyone would have backed Ashton from there. And he injured himself then. He was injured for the next 20 minutes. He only came off at 25, but he played hurt for the next 20 minutes. So it was a big cost to him in his last Thomond Park European game as well.
Yeah, they're hoping he will be back for a semi-final against Racing 92. So then Murray's try is obviously another major moment. And there's not an awful lot to read into it, but I think Eddie's covered it well. He clearly knew the rules, and you've mentioned it a little better than the officiating committee at Thomond Park, and it's just what you've come to expect from a guy that knows his own game, knows the opposition's game, knows the law book, and it's the reason why he's the best nine in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Aaron Smith might have some argument, but I think Conor is definitely neck and neck, if not ahead of him at this stage. I think overall, I think it comes back to the lineouts. It comes back to at a number of moments, Tran Duke as well. Munster's accuracy overcame Toulon's talent. So even Guillaume Garadoux tries to pick the ball up on his own line with one hand. I mean, what was he doing? He was the best hooker in the Six Nations by a mile, and yet. He just didn't do what everyone is coached to do in that in such a pressure scenario on your own line, pick it up with two hands and make sure you don't drop it. I mean, it that's your basics.
And for those of us that wouldn't be as familiar with the law, because Conor Murray clearly is, as soon as that ball is knocked on, it's game on.
It's not even a knock on. Hands on is not out, but once you go to pick the ball up, the ball is out. So he, in the picking, even if it had gone backwards, I know there was a lot of talk amongst the officials about a knock on. But once he lifted the ball up, to my understanding anyway, that's out. And Murray even was questioning himself. He said, "Well, I may as well just touch this down just in case." I think he was it was very, very incredibly smart stuff.
It was risky in that you have Toulon under the pump.
Yeah.
You can see the penalty. You give them an easy exit, and the pressure's relieved.
Yeah, absolutely. But he knew he was on solid ground, I think. I mean, he was backing himself to we saw the previous week Robin Copeland gave away a similar penalty for coming around the side when he thought the ball was out. So there is a risk. But it was incredibly smart, but incredibly loose from a player of Garrido's experience, and it fed into Tran Duke missing touch at a pivotal moment, fed into his line out throwing that wasn't the best. Obviously there was a lot of pressure there, but they just didn't have their basics quite nailed down. If that team had their basics nailed down with the talent that they have, no one would stop them.
Eddie, the performance of the two midfield players in Sam Arnold and Rory Scannell, quite incredible the way that they were able to keep themselves in the game against what we thought would have been the defining combination in the game, Nonu and Vastereau. They barely missed a tackle between them. They got themselves over the gain line when they were needed to carry. I know you've already referenced how the line out and the execution of Munster's line out on Toulon's ball probably helped the two midfield players deal with what was coming down their channels. But we wondered, would there be a big issue there in midfield, particularly with the injury concerns over Scannell? And boy, did they deliver.
No, they're outstanding. But I think what a big help was is that when Vastereau and Nanu ran at them, it was off of phase play. So you just had more numbers in the middle of the field. They weren't as isolated. The difference between defending them when you have a defensive line in place off a ruck, where you have maybe a line of six or eight guys across the field, the space is a lot tighter. And they did the right thing. They went in and chopped them low, and they got in and topped them. They stopped the offloads. Now, to try and do that off a line out where there's basically three guys minding, 40 metres of space is a much bigger ask. So I think, I don't want to overplay, but going back to the line out, that took away that would have probably been their best go forward for Toulon off set piece. Now, when they were called on to make those tackles, you rightly point out, in the phase play, they were outstanding. And then again, when they had to get over the gain line, they did pin their ears back. But I just think it was just the energy that Munster brought for the 80 minutes. Like, guys just. Look, there's a great saying, in sport, like, no matter how good the other player is, he's got as many bones in his backside as you have. So you might as well run as hard as you can and make a tackle. And, that's what they did. They forced Toulon to make tackles. They won collisions. And they stopped the offload as well, which was probably what Toulon were depending on in the middle of the field. And it was just relentless. But, like, when you win a game by 1 point, all those things have to go right on the day. Like one slip and the game is over. So credit where credit is due to Munster. They just kept playing and playing and playing. And look, had Tran Duck put the ball in touch as he should have, we mightn't be having this conversation. And well, we would, but in a different vein. But that's what you do. You just stay in the game. And I felt all week, could Munster stay in the game with 10 minutes to go? If it's a one-score game with 10 minutes to go, they would get a shot. It's just the way the game goes. And then when you get the shot, do you take it? And by golly, did Conway take it when he got it? And that's the difference at the end of the day.
Yeah, Rory, despite having that decision with Zeebo and Ashton go against him, despite the concession of that truly bizarre try to Conor Murray, Toulon have their noses in front going into the end game. And as Eddie says, if Tran Duke find his touch, which he should have done, that's probably game over. And that brings us to one of the great European Cup tries in Thomond Park history from Andrew Conway. A moment of magic starting with the unbelievable catch and body positioning, not even looking at the touchline. He knows where he is.
Yeah.
And then the swerve, the body swerve, the athleticism, the acceleration, just a thing of sheer beauty.
Yeah, and I missed it. Because I assumed that the ball had gone into touch, and the ball going into touch means a little bit of chance to get typing on the match report. And I looked up, and suddenly Conway was racing between a couple of defenders. It was sensational. You know, the angle from behind where you see him with his 2 feet planted in goal, like a wide receiver, you know, sorry, infield, but like a wide receiver, just with his body arched. It was just phenomenal athleticism, and it was, you know, a player who was so highly regarded. I saw a lot of clips of his Junior Cup final performance for Blackrock, a player who was rated really highly the whole way through, and who has had to work really hard, having had a kind of an early career blip, and has come back and become, you know, he's missed a Grand Slam. He would have been involved in that Grand Slam somewhere. He probably would, you know, the maybe number 23 in the squad, but still he would have been involved and had a role in a Grand Slam, and he missed it through injury. He hasn't played since their last pool game in Cast, and he was brilliant from the time he hit Tuasova out over the line in the first half. It was him who chased that kick for the try for Murray. He was the one who pinned Toulon back with his chase and tackle, and then that moment where he just, you know, to the Toulon chasing line, I think they presumed it was gone out as well. Tuisova overran it. Tranduc disappeared. He should have held the space, and he just, we went walkabout.
Didn't want to know, did he?
Didn't want to know. And you got to exploit that. And Murray, sorry, Conway was just superb and lifted the roof off Thomond and Park, and cancelled out another really memorable try in Ashton's try, which was a class score as well. It was just the moment. I mean, in American sports, it would probably go down as the catch or something. You know, they would call, just give it a name forevermore, because it's going to live up there with all those Thomond Park moments in the past. It's one of the greatest tries ever scored at the venue.
And that says an awful lot. Eddie, the reaction of Johan van Graan after the game, he said it was the most emotional moment of his career. And you already talked about the rhetoric, as you described it in the build-up to the game. He wanted Munster on a war footing because he knew the sort of physical attritional battle that was going to be coming their way. For a guy that has only taken over a few months ago and mid-season, not knowing an awful lot about Munster or Irish rugby, trying to familiarise himself with his new surroundings, his players, his coaching staff, how big an achievement is it that he has Munster in the last four of the Champions Cup?
That's a tremendous achievement, because the big worry this year for Munster was that transition between Erasmus and Van Graan. You know, I mean, it's a really tricky thing for a new coach to come in any time to an organisation, but to come in mid-season. To be fair to Munster, I mean, it has been pretty much seamless, which is an extraordinary achievement when you consider all the moving parts around something like that. And I think the win on Saturday, to his credit, he knew going into the game that it was all about being in the moment and being in the Munster energy, and he obviously understands that, you know, because he got his head around what Munster rugby's about, and he was able to, like, at the end, he's the guy standing in front of the team and the build up to the game. He's the guy talking to them, so he has to understand what's driving them, and he's figured it out, obviously, because I thought all week he was saying the right things in terms of what was Munster's best road to victory, and I think he got that bit right. I think they fed off it. I thought the energy in the stadium was colossal again. And I think, yeah, for that reason, having got his arms around it so quickly is an extraordinary achievement. And even if they didn't win on Saturday, even if that, you know, Andrew Conway doesn't score that phenomenal try, it would have still been a phenomenal performance for Munster. Like, it can't be boom or bust that because of Andrew Conway, everything's brilliant. And if he hadn't scored, it would have been terrible. It would have been disappointing because they'd put themselves in a position to win it. So I think the overall achievement of getting that performance on the field, which thankfully led to the victory, spectacular victory, but the fact that he got his arms around the whole Munster entity and got them in the right place mentally for the game, it gave himself a shot and took it. Yeah, it's a huge achievement. Have come in mid-season is my starting point on that. If he was there a year, you'd say, you know, he's figured it out, but to do it so quickly, in fairness, huge credit to him for that.
And before we move on to Leinster, Rory, Racing 92's second half performance, in particular against Clermont, was pretty impressive. Like, they did look like they have this European Champions Cup scene licked now. They know where they're going as a team. But Munster have already beaten them this season. They've had some really good battles over the last 5 or 6 years. Racing will start as favourites, I'd put it to you, but there's no reason for Munster to fear anything.
No, it's the fourth time they've met them in two seasons, so they're very familiar foes. They had their blip last year, Racing, but it looked like they're back to the force that won the top 14 two seasons ago. They look very good. Any team that can spring Dan Carter off the bench for the final quarter is a bit of a game changer. You know, they have the resources. There's no bad players in their squad. They probably have some similar flaws to Toulon in terms of their accuracy and their, you know, the unbelievably talented, and they rely on that talent a little bit. But they've so much power. Munster now have to prove that they can do it away from Thomond Park in Bordeaux. They're off to South Africa for 2 weeks, which you know, the travel's not ideal, but it might be nice to get away from the bubble, get a bit of warm weather training. They're playing the Kings this week, which means they can pretty much train for Racing, because the Kings are the worst team in rugby. So you know, they can focus completely on Racing this week, then play the Cheetahs, and then come back in for Limerick for the last week. So it's set up for them. I wouldn't be backing them very strongly just yet. I'd like to see a couple of players come back if at all possible, but certainly give them a fighting chance going over there, because they've proven that, you know, even against Saracens last year, they showed signs that they could trouble big teams, even if Saracens were comfortable. Racing aren't as good as Saracens, so I think they've got a very good chance, but Racing do start as favourites.
Yeah, well, that was Saturday afternoon, so Munster upheld their side of the bargain when it comes to a potential All-Irish Champions Cup final. And Leinster did likewise yesterday. We had the game live and exclusive free and off the ball yesterday. Eddie, maybe not quite as similarly to the Munster game, but there were one or two major turning points after that really bright start from Leinster. Saracens got on top and dominated maybe that middle 20 minutes of the first half, all coming and culminating in that kick to the corner before half-time, where Leinster somehow managed to get out of that with that 1 point halftime lead, and they bounded from the pitch, seemingly really buoyed by that as they headed in for the changing room, a pep talk from Lancaster and Leo Cullen. What did you make of Leinster's first half performance in particular?
I thought the overall performance was excellent, but I thought Leinster's first half performance was very good when they played the way they had to play. Like, they got it off to a great start, and I think it was interesting that they caused a lot of problems for Saracens in their back three by moving the ball early and deep. And for the whole game, that, like, if you do that, the wingers are very nervous all day. They can't stay deep in the pocket and wait for you to kick it down to them if you're going to move it. So they have to come it up. And that gets them out of their comfort zone. So Leinster did really well off the bat doing that. And then they got that great score from moving from deep. But, so a team like Saracens are relentless and they're going to come at you. And the most important thing for Leinster was to survive. Now, there's a big difference between giving away penalties and the scoreboard taking over and giving away a try. Had Saracens scored a try in the first half, that would have changed the whole momentum. Had they scored just for halftime, a bigger boost again. But the fact that Leinster got into the changing rooms on the back of defending their goal line, you don't want to be in that place. But if you can get out the other side of it, the value in terms of cementing your mindset is crucial. And then when Leinster came out in the second half, they drew first blood in terms of the try that really was, I think, it kind of finished the game with Dan Levy's try 7 minutes into the second half. And again, that's where Leinster can be relentless, as we saw them against Exeter. So I thought it was a cracking game of rugby, but I just thought the better team won. And I think, listen to Mark McCall afterwards, he's an honest guy, like Marky. He didn't make any bones about it. He just felt they were beaten on the day. And I thought Leinster had their homework done. Defensively, they chopped, tackled brilliantly when they had to. Some of them were almost kamikaze tackles. They went in so low. And you might have said some of them were borderline, whether they were using their arms or not. But they had their arms up. But it was just really intense defence. And when you think about holding a team like Saracens, just one try, that to me is a hell of an achievement over 80 minutes. And then on the other side of it, Leinster go and score three tries. There's no argument. Better team won. I think Mark McCall is very honest about that after.
Obviously, tries win games, Rory. And I was speaking to Mark McCall after the game, and he was a bit annoyed by the concession of at least two of those tries. Obviously, the Dan Levy try is never a try you want to see any side conceding from a defensive point of view. But it was the two forwards, Irish forwards, that kind of created that little bit of space. And throughout the game, I just felt that the Leinster were the slicker of the two teams, and ultimately that meant they were the side creating the space, which led to the game-winning scores.
I think we've realised over the last 3 weeks that Billy Vunipola is the most important man in English rugby by an absolute country mile, because Saracens, like England, just lost a lot of their thrust because they didn't have their fulcrum. He's the guy that gets them over the game line. He's the guy who draws defenders to them and creates space. And without him, Jackson Rae just doesn't do the same stuff. You know, he doesn't command the same attention, which meant Leinster, it was very, they weren't committing bodies to the breakdown. They had a lot of numbers in the front line. They only had two players dropping back to cover the backfield. So defensively, they were very comfortable, even though they didn't have possession for most of the game. And they struck when they had the opportunities. They took that first try. so clinically. How often do you see a team early in the game mess something like that up and you kind of go, ah, it's fine, they'll have loads more chances? They didn't. They barely had another chance the entire first half like it, you know, and it was James Lowe's game-breaking capacity that broke Liam Williams' tackle, then held off Wigglesworth, I think it was, and then passed it inside. And then Nasiwa just, like, the pace that we haven't seen for, you know, a couple of years, recent Nasiwa, was unbelievable. That rest has done him good over the last 5-6 weeks. So they took that chance, then they kept their noses in front, and then they exploited. Leo Cullen said they'd seen that read from Saracens before. My understanding is that your pillar never drifts, that your pillar should stay your pillar, but Fagallo bites in on James Ryan, and James Ryan was just so clever just to give the ball back to Levy, and Levy was sensational throughout. The two of them were, actually, and it was the new guard that drove Leinster forward in that second half. They were those two in particular were sensational.
I put it to Eddie that little moment between James Ryan and Dan Levy kind of encompasses how much confidence the Irish and Leinster and Munster players are playing with at the moment, because maybe 4 or 5 years ago, Levy pops that pass to James Ryan and Ryan just goes and takes the tackle, recycles it, and Leinster look for quick ball, where he had that presence of mind. He knew that Levy was looking for the return pass, and it was a lovely weighted offload to him, which created the space.
Yeah, it was a lovely bit of football, you know, and again, it was Saracen's mistake to make the pillar chasing the ball and let the pillar position, and it's the one position around the ruck. If you get beaten at pillar, it's a jailbreak, because you're straight in behind everybody. The only person between you usually and the try line is the full back, and even then, you know, Levy was able to finish it himself because the full back was out of position, so because he's not expecting that break. So it was a nice bit of football. But just on a bigger point there, Dave, I was just, as the game was winding down yesterday, and you're thinking, is there any way back in here for Saracens? And I was just thinking, no, there's not, because all these guys now, if normally when you play a team like Saracens for an Irish team, you look at them dripping with English internationals and overseas players and two champions, you know, two years, you know, you kind of can be in awe of them. And I'm thinking, no, none of these guys are going to be in awe of them. None of these old Leinster players are going to be in awe of Saracens. In fact, if anything, they'd say, like, us to be in awe of, like, we can beat these guys. We beat them international level, beat them at club level. There's an element of that now with Leinster and Ireland, you know, because, like, that English, we beat England in Twickenham comfortably this year. A lot of those guys were on the field that day. And so there's a sense that what's to be worried about? Just go out and play it, because we're better than them. And I got that sense from Leinster yesterday, that even when they were under the pump, there was no panic. Now, they had some massive performances, and I thought, I was going to say, his leadership, watching him around the field, watching him, how he talks to guys, watching how he interacts with the players and how he carries himself has been huge. And I thought he was crucial, even going back to the game in Dublin against Exeter when like Sexton went off the field and they just conceded a try and they were under the pump. It was Unsay who rallied the troops under the sticks and went down and kicked a penalty from 45 metres himself. So, like, you know, that's the potency of Leinster at the moment. They've got some fantastic players, a bunch of young guys who, you know, don't fear anybody, and you've got some really, like, smart leaders like Doucet and Sexton around the team. And I think that, like, Leinster are the best team in Europe at the moment. There's no question about it. Like, nobody can question their ability to deliver on the big day. And it was, if it was a soccer match yesterday, it was a 3-1 victory, you know, no argument. And for that reason, I think, like, Leinster are in, and they still have guys to come back, you know, who've been injured. They're in rude health. And I must say, like, they were extremely impressive on all aspects of their game yesterday.
Yeah, the likes of Jack Connor, Sean O'Brien, Jordan Larmour, to name but three, that might be back for a potential semi-final. So Eddie describes them as the best team in Europe, which thereby, by extension, you would have them as favourites to win this competition now. So they're coming up against a Scarlet team that are absolutely flying, top their pool, know how to win, Pro 14 champions, came to Dublin twice last May, won both games, knockout games. So if Leinster don't fear Saracens and don't fear taking on these English teams, there's no way that Scarlets are going to fear Leinster.
Yeah, there's probably a Welsh radio station now talking about how Scarlets are the best team in Europe, you know, I mean, and with some justification, they're probably second best in my book, you know, with no disrespect to Munster or Racing. I think Scarlets have been phenomenal. And yet, you know, they came to Dublin, to the RDS, 14 men, beat Leinster in a semi-final. Leinster were off the game, but, you know, that's not Scarlets' problem. And then two weeks later, they came back and hammered Munster. Like, that was a sensational performance at the Aviva Stadium. So they know the territory. They don't fear travelling. They have a game plan that's exciting but effective at the same time. You know, it seemed like the bits I saw of that game on Friday, they were patient. They didn't break three until the end against a big La Rochelle side who kicked the ball quite a lot. So Yeah, like it's a tough semi-final for Leinster, and I think maybe it suits them the fact that they're facing a team they know well, but a team that beat them, and they've a bit of it'll ground them a little bit, because it would be easy to get carried away if you're in that Leinster dressing room now. But really, both Leinster and Munster are back to zero. They're back to the stage where they were this time last year. It's been a tough route to get there, but now they're back. This is when they show that they've improved in terms of results on year on year, and Leinster have definitely improved in terms of performances year on year. They now want to go at least one step further in both competitions, and they definitely have the capacity to go and win this tournament. They have all the skills, they've all the talent, they have the game plan. They've 2 nice weeks now. They play both Italian teams in the Pro 14. They can rest up. They can, be judicious about who they use and who they don't use. It's set up really, really nicely for them. But they didn't manage. I think their management would concede that they probably didn't manage their resources well enough the end game of last season, in terms of they probably peaked in the quarter final. And didn't get it right against Claremont, they didn't get it right against Scarlett. So they have to learn that lesson in terms of making sure that they pitch up for those that semi-final battle in and start really, really well, because they didn't do that in Leon last season.
Okay. Eddie, before I let you go, really quick word on Connacht. In some ways, that display against Gloucester at the weekend encompassed their whole season, a lot of good stuff, but ultimately the bad outweighs the good, and it's, I mean, look, no dressing it up in any way, it's a hugely disappointing first season for Kieran Keane.
It is, because I think had they won on Saturday, and I was saying this last week, that it would have really energised them. I think, they accept that they're not going anywhere in the Pro 14. But, Europe is very exciting. Even it is the Challenge Cup, and it would have suited Connacht to stay in the hunt. And they had played very well in that tournament. But look, it's a tough morning this morning in Galway, because their season is kind of over in many ways. Like, they're just marking time now. Whereas had they won on Saturday, it would have re-energised everybody. So it's a disappointing season, from where they've come from. But I think they'll be disappointed in that. They just let the game slip away from them. They had a chance to do it, but at key moments, they lost the plot a little bit. And that's the price you pay. But it's disappointing for Connacht. Yeah, it's going to be just finishing out the last few weeks of the season now, which is not a good way to go. You always want to feel you're in the hunt for something. For the last 6 or 8 weeks,
Yeah, it's going to be a long summer out in the West. A lot of stuff and work for Kieran Keane to come up with in the build-up to the next season. Eddie, thanks a million for talking to us tonight.
Cheers, thanks.
Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent. You're a gent. Thanks a million.
Thank you, cheers.
Coming up, we're going to be chatting to Billy Joe Padden on the weekend's Gaelic football.
Monday Night Rugby on Off The Ball.